expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Welcome. You take the drink tickets away from that guy yelping in the background. Welcome back to the Drive Time. My guest in the studio is Debbie Morales of Horizons of Friendship and Rob Washburn for our weekly installment of Consider This Live on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. Welcome to both of my guests.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Well, Rob's my co-host. I should still welcome him, though.
Thanks, Dave.
Horizons of Friendship. Well, they are a nonprofit international development organization founded in 1973. They're based in the town of Cobourg, Ontario. They have had over 43 years of continuous operation. That's worth an applause for sure. Absolutely. That's right. 43 years. Now, Horizons has evolved from providing humanitarian aid to long-term community-based development, addressing the root causes of poverty in Mesoamerica, known to most folks, I guess, as Central America and Mexico. Horizon's consistent presence, realized through strong and enduring local partnerships, has enabled sustained impacts at community, provincial, national, and regional levels. To date, Horizons has successfully worked with more than 130 local partner organizations to implement 1,300 distinct, listeners, development projects. Since 1991, Horizons has successfully implemented a 6-year programs funded by the Department of Foreign Affairs, Trade, and Development. Welcome to the show, Debbie.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Very, very glad to have you here this afternoon. And so just a brief overview of what Horizons is, and we're going to get deeper into that. But how did you get involved with Horizons of Friendships?
Well, I have a background in international development, and this past summer they were looking for a resource development coordinator. And I have known about Horizons' work for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. I really respect their grassroots development, and so I was really excited to apply and become a part of their team.
Absolutely. Now, so are you living in this area now then?
I live in Peterborough.
Awesome. That's got to be a heck of a commute in the winter. You've been with them for
8 months now.
So you've experienced the winter.
I've experienced winter. It wasn't too bad this winter.
Good. Now, were you living in Canada before, or were you in Mexico when you were recruited?
I was living in Canada when I was applied for Horizons, but mm-hmm. I have spent time living and working in Mexico. I worked on a literacy project there.
Nice. Rob, I know you have questions.
I do indeed. Let's get to it, because I understand that there has been a rather significant partnership that has recently come to Horizons. I was wondering if you could tell us about it.
Certainly. So on March 22nd, we just signed a contract with Global Affairs Canada. We have been authorized to do a project for 4 years in Guatemala. It's $13.2 million. This is the biggest that Horizons has ever done. And Global Affairs Canada is going to put in $11.4 million of the project. We need to match it with $1.8 million, which is a challenge, but we're up for that challenge. Mm-hmm. And this is going to work to save the lives of women and children in Guatemala. And it's a project that's going to impact the whole department of Totonicapán. So that's like the equivalent of the province of Ontario.
Wow.
And this is 500,000 people that are the population of Totonicapán. This project will impact about 480,000 people of those.
Well, when you say impact, how impacted? Are we building schools? Are we building housing? What are we doing?
So what we're going to do is we're going to partner with Indigenous midwives. Currently in Canada, 8 out of 100,000 women will die in childbirth. We don't really think about that. We don't consider that in Canada very much anymore, but that's a statistic here. In Totonicapán, 280 women will die for every 100,000 that are pregnant.
Wow.
And the majority of births into Tonopah-Can are covered by Indigenous midwives, 69% of them, in fact, but 31% have no attendant. So as part of this project, we are going to partner with more than 1,000 traditional Indigenous midwives. We're going to provide basic equipment for them, things like headlamps, sterile gloves, blankets for the newborns. We're going to work with their experience and knowledge and then train them to upgrade their maternal health skills. And we're also going to work with local health clinics, mm-hmm. with the Ministry of Health, with an immunization program. The lead for our project, Pies de Occidente, both the women who lead that organization, our partner on the ground in Guatemala. They are both trained in Western medicine. One is an Indigenous surgeon and one is a medical doctor, but they're also trained in Mayan medicine as well.
Really? Okay.
And so they're going to, and one of the problems that faces healthcare in Tonopah-Can is 97% of the population are Indigenous Mayaquiche. But most of the health services are provided in Spanish.
Right.
So, and women who go during pregnancy are often discriminated against. So as part of this project, PAs will work with local clinics, the hospital, the University of San Carlos, and they're working with medical and nursing faculty there to train nursing and medical students on intercultural healthcare. To train them in Mayan medicine, to train them in mm-hmm. Mayan cultural practices, to help better support their Indigenous patients when they come to them in the hospitals and the clinics.
Well, you know, you referenced a rather large number in terms of deaths for, and these are the mothers who are dying.
These
we're talking
mothers.
About, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is even the.
Is there some causality there? Is it just because of poverty? I mean, what are the reasons behind such a huge mortality rate?
Part of it is there's. When women have problems, mm-hmm. their partners are often the ones that decide whether they will go and seek attendance at the hospital or not. Even if midwives say they should be going and seeking emergency help, sometimes their partners will say no to that. Also, there's sometimes a lack of knowledge of the high-risk signs of pregnancy. So as part of this project, we're going to be training the general population, midwives, women, their partners, extended families, in the signs of a high-risk pregnancy, the times when women desperately need to be going to the hospital. When women start to hemorrhage, they mm-hmm. need to have medical help that can't be dealt with in the home with a midwife. So part of this project is to train the population as a whole and women counseled individually to understand that when these signs present themselves, they need to seek emergency help. Mm-hmm.
Could you maybe explain a bit about this region in Guatemala and some of the demographics of it as well, just in terms of the economics and the social aspects of it, just to give further context to why this project's so significant?
Certainly. So this is in the Western Highland region of Guatemala. The population is just over 500,000. This is a mostly Indigenous area, so 97% of the population are Indigenous Mayaquiche. In Guatemala, there is a long history of a brutal civil war that mm-hmm. left more than 200,000 Mayan Indigenous peoples missing or killed. The ruling population in Guatemala is still the ruling elite that were part of that genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the peace accords were signed in 1996, there's been little political will to want to address the health issues. Most of the Indigenous population are still living with lack of access to basic health services, to education, to adequate food. In this particular area, 75% of the population live in poverty. A further 13% are in extreme poverty, which means they live on less than one U.S. dollar a day.
And that's 88% of the population you're talking about here,
that's right.
Listeners, just to put that in perspective, okay? You know, you referenced the Civil War and the peace accords. And the real issue, I guess, why groups like Horizons and others have gone down there is because since the peace accords, since the deals that were brokered, quite frankly, by the U.S., since they have come into play, virtually nothing in that accord has been done for the Indigenous people. So the people that were fighting basically signed a peace accord that gave them nothing.
Right.
Is anyone doing anything about that? I mean, who's putting the feet to the fire on that issue?
Well, that's a lot of
I mean, that's not your job, obviously. You guys probably would get in trouble if you were to start to talk about that. But
that's right. A lot of the partners that we work with are grassroots. Well, all of our partners are grassroots organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And they work on those issues. So PAs also works in this politically, and they have been working to have a law of Indigenous medicine passed and approved in Guatemala. They also work to make sure that Indigenous people have proper access to health services. We have another partner in that area in Guatemala that works on intercultural bilingual education. So that's another part of the Peace Accords is access to bilingual education, which also has not been done. But through the work that they have been doing both at the local, regional, and national levels, they have the support now of the Minister of Bilingual Education to support the work that they're doing. And they've given resources to 1,000 teachers and 20,000 students in bilingual bilingual education resources in MAM and Maya-Quiché. So our partners do work on those aspects. They try and work at, you know, the regional, national levels to make change happen.
How difficult has it been for Horizons of Friendship to move ahead? I mean, we've got a great push from our own federal government, thankfully, for the first time in probably close to 10 years, but we won't even talk about that right now. The fact that, okay, so now the government's saying, we're going to help you guys do this. How do you get entry into the areas that you need to help, to the people that you need to help, when clearly there's no support on the part of the government?
Well, for this project, the Ministry of Health is going to support the immunization piece. So, but when this project was put together by PAs and with Horizons' help, they went to the Ministry of Health, they went to the University of San Carlos, they went to the local community leaders and got their input onto this project, and they got the support and approval for this project to happen. So the Ministry of Health will actually support the full immunization piece of this project in Guatemala.
Okay.
Why is it so important to have the Indigenous health aspect to this? Why don't we just go down and say, look, here's the way that we do midwifery here. Here's how we handle these health issues, and just go down and give them the equipment and the training like we have here in Canada. Why is it so important to have that local component, Indigenous component in the health plan?
Because, first of all, we don't usually go down and say our ideas are better. We believe that our partners have the knowledge, the experience, the wisdom to meet the needs in the community. Sometimes what it requires is a bit of technical support or equipment. In this case, the midwives have deep, deep knowledge. They have knowledge of their culture. They have knowledge of ancestral medicine. They have deep midwifery skills. What they require is some support, some equipment, a bit of coordination. This will help network midwives so they can share some of their best practices. It will provide opportunities for training. They might not have had many midwives become midwives from little girls.
Right.
They're chosen by their communities, or they grow up with a mother or grandmother who's been a midwife and learn in that way. So this provides opportunities for them to learn other skills. But the really important piece is that it's culturally respectful, because one of the things that's happening in Guatemala is that medicine in the public system isn't culturally respectful. So women go in to deliver babies. And for example, in Guatemala, the Indigenous women prefer to give birth standing up. And that's not acknowledged in the hospital, or they're treated with disrespect if that's what they would like to do. So it's a really critical piece to support Indigenous healthcare.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here, listeners. You're listening to The Drive Time, which is Canada's only holistic political chat. I'm Dave Glover. With me in studio are Debbie Morales. She is with Horizons of Friendship. We're talking about Horizons of Friendship, their great work that's progressing in Guatemala. And with my usual co-host, Rob Washburn. And we will be right back after this break, listeners. Welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. I'm Dave Glover. Thanks for tuning in to Northumberland 89.7. Well, I almost said 89.7. Never mind. At Northumberland 89.7 here, truly local radio, with Rob Washburn. And we are talking to Debbie Morales of Horizons of Friendship. Welcome back. Rob, you have the next question.
Thanks. Debbie, is this the first time that you've done this kind of work or worked with this organization in Guatemala?
No, we've worked with PAs for quite a number of years, and they have done many small projects on maternal health and ancestral medicine and Indigenous health in Guatemala. Horizons has more than 40 years working in Guatemala as well, so we have a lot of experience accumulated here.
Can you give us some examples of the kind of thing that you've been working with them, or how those programs have played out on the ground?
So they did, a couple years back, they did a pilot project on maternal health, working to do some training with Indigenous midwives. And in the areas where that program was implemented, maternal deaths cut in half. So And that was doing some basic training on, again, the signs of high-risk pregnancies. Mm-hmm. It was training community leaders to have emergency response plans, mm-hmm. because sometimes when women need to go to the doctor, they don't have the money to go to the hospital, yeah. or the transportation to get there. So mm-hmm. they worked as a community on plans to get women who were pregnant to have that ready. So if they needed to go, there was a way for them to get there and access medical services. So we've worked right at, like, PAs, our partner, has worked right on the ground with Indigenous midwives for quite a while in Guatemala, but on smaller projects. This is going to impact the whole department of Totonicapan.
How does that impact then Horizons of Friendship? What sort of things are you going to be doing up here to be supportive of what they're doing down there?
So our program manager, Rene Guerra, he will be in charge of the project here. So we will have a piece where we need to report, obviously, to Global Affairs Canada for what we're doing with this project, what our partner's doing in Guatemala. We'll be providing techno support, financial and administrative monitoring and evaluation support, but we'll also be going down and being there on the ground with them as well. There'll be a steering committee that leads this project made up of board members and staff from Horizons, mm-hmm. and board and staff from PAs, mm-hmm. and our representative from Global Affairs Canada, who will all oversee this project and make sure, and as it moves along, because this is a large project with many, many different pieces to it, mm-hmm. so it will require a big implementation plan, and we will have a steering committee to oversee that and watch things as they go along, make sure if there's any little bumps, we know how to adjust them or make things work so it runs smoothly.
Well, one of the questions you always hear from people is, oh, well, they're going to raise money. They're going to be expecting people to donate to this. You get a big thing coming from the government. How much of the money raised or how much of the money from this project is going to the ground? That's the one question people always ask about projects like this. How much of this money is actually going to be used on the ground?
About 90% of it is used on the ground. Most of this project is for funding in Guatemala. There is a piece that the Government of Canada is funding for mm-hmm. public engagement here in Canada. So as part of this project, there will be medical personnel from Canada who will participate in international exchanges with midwives in Guatemala. And midwives from Guatemala will come to Canada and share best practices and knowledges here. So there's a part of that money mm-hmm. that will be spent will happen here in Canada as well. We're also going to be working with Indigenous organizations, midwife organizations, and educational institutions here in Canada, in Ontario, on this project around maternal health, around international development, and sharing knowledge. There'll be roundtables and colloquiums and medical presentations as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a huge project, a huge project for Horizons. Is this the only project Horizons is working on right now, though?
No, we have 16 partners doing 22 projects in 7 countries in Central America mm-hmm. and Mexico. So part of this is the government is funding 85% of this project, but we raise all the money right. both for the match for this and for all our other 16 partners.
Absolutely. So just to give you an idea, listeners, of some of the countries that they are involved in. And, well, why don't we look at where the funding comes from first? Because that's a big question people always ask, you know, where's the money coming from? For these programs, based on 2014-15 audited financial statements, which they have to provide, government funding is 43%, 21% foundation and NGO collaboration, 17% from general donations and fundraising. There's other revenue streams at 13%, investment and endowments, 3%, and major gifts, 2%. The funding goes 79% to programming, only 16% to administration, listeners, okay? Fundraising is 3% because you got to cover the cost of the advertising and whatever the fundraising project is. And, of course, there are political activities, which are, of course, according to certain government regulations, can only be a certain amount of money anyway. Otherwise, you could be in trouble. But let's look at some of the countries that you're working in. Mexico, you know, you've got a number of projects down there, assistance to small-scale farming families and sustainable agriculture. Guatemala, we've talked about, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama, and you're working very closely with most in these particular countries. These are your partners, and you're working very closely with governmental agencies, not just from our country, but from those partner countries as well, right?
As well, most of them, though, are grassroots mm-hmm. partners, grassroots organizations that we're working with in each of those countries. And each project is different based on the need of the community we're working in. So they come to us and say, this is a need we see. This is what we think can fix that need or fill that need. Mm-hmm. Please support us with this. And that's what Horizons does. We come and we provide financial and capacity building and training. We do work with gender, and we do regional conferences that help our partners share some of the learning that they've
Now, most of these are long-term relationships that you've had. What is the biggest challenge of a project like this new one that you've taken on with, in terms of the scope and in terms of your own resources? What are the big challenges for you?
Well, certainly one of the challenges will be the fundraising aspect of it. Mm-hmm. We have to match $1.8 million, which is about $450,000 every year for the next 4 years. That's a big piece. But we also have had organizations, foundations, unions have come forward to say mm-hmm. that they want to be partners and support this. Mm-hmm. We'll definitely look to our local community. Mm-hmm.
But you can fundraise across the country, right? I mean, and anyone can donate to Horizons of Friendship, right?
Yes, and we have partners and individuals, foundations, unions all across Canada that support our projects. And certainly just the implementation piece will be a big piece of this project, just because there are so mm-hmm. many pieces to it. But we have the background and knowledge and experience. We mm-hmm. have a lot of work in results-based management. We've done projects with the Government of Canada before. Mm-hmm. We know how to monitor and evaluate them, and our partner on the ground is very strong in maternal health. So those pieces we feel really strongly about. We feel that we're really positive moving forward with this project.
Well, having been an organization that's been in the community for 43 years, to have something like this come about, how is it significant in terms of the evolution of the organization itself at this particular time? Because you have so much background and you've sort of been seen in a certain way. How is this significant then in terms of your own evolution overall?
Well, it certainly shows the place that Horizons has in international development in Canada. Mm. When the government called for proposals on this project, there was quite a number of organizations that submitted proposals. And we were only one of 12, some of them being quite larger organizations mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that received funding for this project. So for Horizons of Friendship, based in Cobourg, to be one of the ones chosen, and for a $13.2 million project, that says something about the accumulated experience and knowledge mm-hmm. of the staff, of our partners, what we've accomplished in Central America and Mexico.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about money, and I know that the budget just came out not so long ago, mm-hmm. and there's been some changes in terms of the funding of international development. I'm wondering if you could, has there been any difference with under the new budget and under the new government in terms of your own funding beyond the project that you've just taken on?
Well, currently the rules for that, it changed quite dramatically in the last few years. So Horizons previously could present proposals mm-hmm. to what used to be the Department of Foreign Affairs, Trade and Development. And that could be for a number of our partners in Central America. But that funding ended in 2014. Mm-hmm. And the government changed to a new model where they would issue calls for proposals. Mm-hmm. And if you worked in that country, had the knowledge, experience, background to submit a proposal, mm-hmm. then you could answer a call for proposals. With the new government, we're hoping that there will be another look at international development and the work we do. Mm-hmm. Because for us at Horizons, what that did, it decreased our budget by 47%. Mm-hmm. And it meant that we no longer had funding for our partners mm-hmm. in Central America. We had to cut back projects where we used to be able to fund them for projects that were closer to $50,000. Mm-hmm. We've been funding them this last year with projects that are around $14,000. Mm-hmm. And all of our funding has come from our monthly donors, our annual donors, the revenues from our thrift shop here in Cobourg. Mm-hmm. We have foundation and NGO partners who have been strong partners with us for many years, mm-hmm. who stepped up and helped support some more with those projects. But certainly moving forward, we really hope that the government will look at Canada's role in international development mm-hmm. and give an opportunity for our organizations to submit their own proposals.
So I understand that there's been a commitment for a slight increase in the current budget, but they're looking at a two-year commitment, $128 million in each of the next 2 years was announced. And yet, when you look at some of the things that are being said in the news, you hear that some international development organizations are looking for a 10-year commitment, that they were looking for that kind of a horizon, and something in terms of 0.7% of gross national income. And I understand that we're quite a long way from that. I think we're something like 0.25% of gross national income. Can you maybe explain to us what it is that organizations like yours are looking for from the federal government in terms of long-term increased funding?
Stable
funding, pardon me.
Well, when you work long-term with partners, sustainable development takes time. It doesn't happen in a one-year project on the ground. It takes time working with partners. It takes time for partners to work in communities. Needs change over time. And when funding changes so dramatically, many, many organizations can just disappear mm-hmm. because they're not able to fund their projects anymore or fund their partners on the ground. Stable funding would help the whole NGO community do better and more work in all the countries that we work in around the world, not just where we work in Central America and Mexico, but all over. We have NGOs all over Canada that are doing great work. But our government has, in previous years, cut back that funding to international development. Mm-hmm. And there has always been a hope and a push. 0.7% is sort of the magic number. I don't know. I'm not sure myself, honestly, whether we have ever reached that number. Mm-hmm. But it is a target that has always been, we strive for.
Has Horizons lost partners due to the diminished funding and then lack of sustainability, if you will? Because, I remember this occurred, very quickly after the previous government's first mandate was to reduce this funding. It was almost one of the first things they did out of the gate. And it's been pretty much a decade since organizations like yours and many other NGOs across the country have received the funding they were getting in the past, plus the recognition. I mean, it's almost as though this is being done begrudgingly, but, according to the United Nations anyway, we have an obligation to work with these organizations like your own. So I wonder what has been the impact of that lack of sustained funding, and how difficult has it been to bring some of those players who you say may have even just disappeared? Are you able to find those people?
For us, what it has meant is that we've had to cut back with our partners. Mm-hmm. So for the organizations we work with, that has meant they have laid off staff, they have shrunk their programs, they've been able to reach less people. I think about one of our partners in Nicaragua that we just visited on the Atlantic coast. They work on violence against women in rural communities, and there's very little funding there to support violence against women. So they have a lawyer who accompanies women through the justice system to make sure that the perpetrators go through that system. And they have trained local community judges to deal with violence in their communities. The impact on that partner has been they have less staff to be able to support that. These communities are far out and rural, and one person is going, traveling community to community. So there's less support to be able to do that. There's less resources there to help them to accompany the number of victims of violence that they're seeing in their offices, and there's not mm-hmm. enough staff to help them through that process. It's a difficult situation always for NGOs. Mm-hmm. And I know often sometimes Canadians will say, well, why are we supporting international development work? We have needs here at home. And I think that we have an ability to do both. I think we have the resources as a country to be able to help abroad and help at home as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really interesting, Dave, because what you mentioned is very true. Over the last 10 years, the amount that the government has given to foreign aid of this kind has gone from 0.34% of the gross income down to 0.24, which is quite significant. Also, there was a freeze on the budget for international aid for the last 5 years.
That's
under
right.
the Harpers. So mm-hmm. I think it's really significant the amount of money that was cut. But what's interesting, too, though, is that the International Development Minister, Marie-Claire Bibeau, just said in March that the 0.7% is too ambitious a target. Do you think that's a fair analysis?
I guess for our current government, they're coming in and looking at everything that's happening. We're looking at Syrian refugees that we're assisting here in Canada as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe in the short term, that seems like an unrealistic target. I think it's something we should strive for. I think that we need to see increases back up to higher levels of support for international development.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that our current government is looking forward to that. There has been a movement forward, and we all see that as a really positive step for international development.
Well, that's really interesting because if you go back, I don't know what you remember, Dave, but under Jean Chrétien, Central and South America were really big focuses of that government and of international aid. And then when Paul Martin came into office, it seemed to shift to Africa.
Yeah.
And there was a real emphasis on Africa. And right now, there seems to be a huge emphasis on Iraq and Syria and the Middle East. Do you think we're going to see a shift back to Central America?
Well, currently, right now, Central America is having quite a humanitarian crisis in terms of the number of migrants that are leaving their countries. So in particular, in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, hundreds of thousands of people are leaving for the violence, the poverty. There's a severe drought impacting those three countries right now. Mm-hmm. Just this past year alone, Mexico and the United States received 300,000 refugees at its border.
Well, the Americans are calling them illegals, though. We've got some presidential candidates saying they're going to ship all those people back home. And also there have been some reports in the media, not a lot because it's Hillary Clinton, but her response to what was happening down in Guatemala in the last few years, too. So, I mean, it seems as though Canada is willing to say, okay, now we've got a government now that's willing to get back in the game. But we've got Mexico and the U.S., both major partners here in this, or should be anyway, in the region, who are basically wanting to turn their back on that region. And to your point about Jean Chrétien, I mean, you have to remember when Chrétien was elected, we had just seen the end of the treaty again with Guatemala, and the wars had just ended. We saw what was going on with the Contras. I mean, we know what the Americans have done in Central America. They've been doing it since the 1950s under the Dulles brothers. So it's got to be difficult because one of the problems you face as an NGO, too, is who are your partners? I mean, some of the concern that has come at least the past 20 years or so has always been, well, you're working down there, but you're working with revolutionaries. You're working down there with people who are anti-government. And, I mean, you know, that's got to be a concern for you, too, because they can shut off the tap as a result of who they think your partners are. Is that a concern that Horizons has had to deal with perhaps of late?
I don't know anything lately that we've had to deal with in that sense. Our partners are small and they're grassroots. We don't have the huge amount of civil unrest that was happening before. There's certainly some serious problems in Honduras right now that makes it difficult and sometimes unsafe when we're there. And obviously Guatemala has had some very big difficulties politically in the last few years with their president, vice president arrested for corruption. And So there's lots going on, but Horizons doesn't try to get politically involved in that.
No, of course not.
We work with the organizations that are on the ground within the communities.
How difficult is it to stay focused on just that, though, when you're down there working with these people who are being denied their culture, being denied their language, being denied their access to medicine? I mean, it's got to be a very interesting tightrope that you're walking down there, Debbie.
I think sometimes it probably could be a fine line. For me, I don't have the experience. If you were talking to Patricia right now, I'm sure she could tell many stories about she's worked for 25 years with Horizons and projects in Central America and Mexico. But certainly you always have to be aware of the politics when you're in a country.
Absolutely. We're going to take our next break of the hour. When we come back, we'll be having more of our conversation with Debbie Morales. We're going to talk about giving as well to Horizons of Friendship so that the listeners know that, you know, if you don't live in Cobourg or West Northumberland, if you're listening to us online anywhere in the country, we're going to give you the information you need to make a donation if you'd like to help this or any of the other NGOs that are working on behalf of people struggling around the world. Let's face it, we you know, it's one planet. We're all in this together, right, Debbie?
That's right.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back to The Drive Time right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. You're listening to Canada's only holistic political chat. With me in the studio is Debbie Morales of Horizons of Friendship and my partner in crime every Wednesday evening, Rob Washburn. Welcome back to the show. Rob, I know you had a question.
Thanks, Dave. It's been announced by the Minister of International Development, Marie-Claude Bibeau, that there's going to be a review done for the international development portion of Global Affairs Canada, which they hope to make public this fall. Are you going to be, as Horizons, not you personally, but is Horizons of Friendship going to be involved in that review process? And could you tell us a bit about what that means?
I don't know whether we'll be involved in that process or not. I don't know if we've been asked for involvement in that process or if we'll be able to put some input into it. Certainly, NGOs will be wanting to have a say in that.
If you could sit down across the table from the minister, what might be some things that Horizons would like to see?
I think sustained support for development. I think the ability for organizations to submit proposals for their partners to say, this is what's needed in a country. This is what our partners see and what they need support for. And can we present a proposal on that that's not tied to just what the government of Canada specifically sees as the country or the need at that current time?
I know that there's been a lot of pressure from the Canada Revenue Agency and Finance Canada in terms of political activities of charities. Has Horizons of Friendship been reviewed at all under those two ministries?
I'm new enough to not be able to know the answer to that question, actually. But I don't. Our political activities, we have a very low amount of political activity within our organization. So if we were reviewed, I think you were listing we have 2% that's
2%,
political.
That's right.
So it's a very small amount. But it's certainly under those rules, it made it very difficult for any organization that is involved politically.
Mm-hmm. Well, they definitely try to discourage political involvement from NGOs. And again, we have a different government now, but how different is it really going to be? And I guess a lot of organizations like your own have their fingers crossed. Is there one thing you'd like to see the government doing for NGOs?
Well, we're obviously, in terms of the project we're about to do, we're really happy with the support they're mm-hmm. giving, because that mm-hmm. that is bigger than anything the government has ever done before. Mm-hmm. It used to be a match of 3-1, and this one is currently a match of 6-1,
right?
Mm-hmm. Which is huge. That makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Definitely, I would like to see the government continue to support projects like this and continue to give that help across Canada and around the world. I think we need to support development in other places.
Absolutely. Well, we definitely do. I want to thank you for being here. But before we depart, because we've still got some other stuff to talk about, I want to talk about giving, and I want to talk about, you know, how people make donations. There are a number of ways. Listeners, you can go to the Horizons website. By the way, Horizons is www.horizons.ca. And go to their Ways to Give section. You can be a monthly donor, special occasion gifts, memorial fund donor, planning. There's planned giving. Let's look at the planned giving, though. How does one get involved with planned giving? What does that mean?
So planned giving is when people choose to leave something in their will. So they may decide to leave, it could be securities or stocks or a donation in their mm-hmm. will to Horizons, and then that goes to further support Horizons' longevity and supportive mm-hmm. projects in the future.
Okay, and so anyone can go. Now, you can go to the website and there's the donate button. You can click on the donate button and make a donation. Are these donations tax deductible?
Yes, absolutely.
They are. Okay. So does it matter how small the donation?
Or? No, not at all. We're a charitable organization, so the full amount that is donated is tax deductible, or we'll receive a tax credit for.
Tax credit. That's because, again, it's that time of the year, right, Rob?
Yeah. One of the things that's really interesting, though, is that you also have other ways that the community can be involved. You also plan trips several times a year. Could you tell us a bit about those and what they involve?
We do delegations down to visit our partners. So each year we go to a different country. We take anyone who would be interested in traveling. The idea is to see a country from its historical, cultural, and mm-hmm. social development context. Mm-hmm. And as part of that trip, we visit our partners on the ground and the communities. We just came back from Nicaragua this past February. Next year, we'll be traveling to Guatemala. Mm-hmm. So we'll be visiting this maternal health project and four other partners that we have in Guatemala as well. Mm-hmm. We also visit cultural and historical sites and have presentations usually by partners within the country to give a bit of the historical context and some mm-hmm. of the economic and political situations that people are dealing with within the country.
What kind of response do you get from the people who go?
Life-changing. It's mm-hmm. it's certainly, it's one thing to read about a project. It's another thing to be there and meet with the people on the ground. So in Nicaragua, having women come forward and tell their stories about how they have dealt with violence in their communities mm-hmm. and how the support from our partner, Amica, has changed how women experience violence in their communities was very powerful. Mm-hmm. And these women were telling us deeply distressing stories. Mm-hmm. But with strength and courage and resilience. And there was laughter and humor. And I know a number of our delegates after that particular visit were impressed by just the resilience of communities to improve, to make things better. Mm-hmm. it's just a really wonderful opportunity to see a country in a different way. It's not like visiting it as a tourist.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a number of people locally who've gone down with Horizons, and I know a few people who have gone down and had such a life-changing moment. One fellow I know, for instance, is working with another NGO in Honduras right now as a result of his volunteer work. How often do you see that as a result of people going on these excursions? You know, I mean, Patrick Clark comes to mind. He's another fellow mm-hmm. who was with Horizons volunteering. You know, you get these youths who get involved locally. They do the fundraising, and their parents get involved and do the fundraising. And next thing you know, they're going down with you on a trip. How many people do you figure you could guesstimate have gotten involved with other NGOs or with other organizations down in the regions that you're working with at Horizons?
I don't really have any idea how many, but I know that many people come back from those trips and want to get involved in their own community or talk about the work that Horizons does with their local community mm-hmm. because they see how change can happen and they see how important development work is. We have lots of people in our local community that support that. We have a group of students from Coburg Collegiate that mm-hmm. are working with a group of students in Nicaragua supporting their urban garden and mm-hmm. agricultural and food security projects.
So it's got to be really heartening to realize that, you know, some of the kids you're taking down there who are working there on high school projects are actually going to get into this field and start to work. How important is that to Horizon?
That's really important. That's part of our piece in Canada, because really it's so important to have education about global issues, and we sometimes don't have the opportunities for that. Global education used to be a real part of international development in Canada, yes. and over the years has been cut and cut. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful piece of the Maternal Health Project, is that we actually have a piece to be able to do some public education, to work with students, elementary and secondary school students. Because it's when you really understand what's happening in a country. I went into development myself because of living and working in Mexico, because I really understood the need. When you're on the ground and you see that, mm-hmm. it motivates you to keep working in that field.
Well, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about that, about what got you into doing what it is that you do. We know you love it. We can tell. We can hear it in your voice. But what was it that motivated you to pick up that torch, if you will, and to get involved? You're listening to The Drive Time. We will be right back. And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody, with my guest in the studio, Debbie Morales. We're talking about Horizons of Friendship, how you can donate. The best way to do so, folks, would be to go online to www.horizons.ca/ways to give. Check that out. Go on in there. Now, I guess what I was alluding to when I was asking about people getting involved with NGOs, you know, as I said during the break, you know, most children, when they're asked them what they want to be when they grow up, they don't say, I want to work for an NGO. I want to go help poor people around the world. Some do, but the vast majority of them, you know, they want to be police officers or doctors or some even architects, but rarely NGOs. How did you get motivated to become involved with just NGOs? I mean, you mentioned earlier before the break working with folks in Mexico, mm-hmm. but what was it that sort of triggered that for you as a child or a youth?
Well, I always had an interest in other cultures and in development work, and in high school, I had a teacher who really had us look at other places around the world and think of things from a different perspective. Instead of from our own cultural perspective, think about things in a different way. And that gave me an interest, but it was actually going down and being in Mexico and working with children in the Literacy Project that really I came back and took my degree in international development after that. Because I was working with a Mayan Spanish-English library. It was working to develop literacy with the local public school. Mm-hmm. And the students that would come into the library, our library was open 9 to 1, and they would come 1 hour a day from their class. We were supposed to close from 1 to 5. And at 1 o'clock, 50 students would show up and want to keep learning. And so many of them were not going to be able to go past grade 6 because their families couldn't afford the transportation to the next level of schooling. They couldn't afford the books or the uniforms.
Right.
But the children had such a desire. They had their dreams of what they wanted to do, and it was disheartening to know that they weren't going to be able to continue. And just the passion and of those children, that was what motivated me and inspired me. And I was working in an area of Mexico where tourism was taking over many indigenous areas.
Mm-hmm.
So you really saw the contrast.
Okay, do you have one particular story from that experience that you like to tell?
If from Mexico?
Yeah.
It was, you know, speaking with, I just became so close to the people there. And my husband actually is from Mexico. I met him. He was on the board of that library, actually. That's how we met.
Is that right?
Yes.
Incredible.
And, you know, his father is Mayan, or was Mayan. Mm-hmm. But none of he or his brothers or sisters grew up speaking Maya, because there was such a pressure to speak Spanish to have jobs that his father said, I won't speak it to you because you're not going to get a job if you speak the Mayan language. And it's such a loss for everyone to have lost that language. He used to teach me words in Maya when I was first learning Spanish. And just, I have such a respect for the Mayan culture. And I don't know, I just, to me, this is a passion. This is my life's dream.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, that's it's always the greatest thing when you can do something you love. And that's, you know, they always tell us that when we're growing up. Find something you love, and it's not going to feel like a job. It's just going to feel like something you love. And that's where you're at. Now, you have children yourself.
I do. I have three children.
Are they small children? Are they
15, 13, and 10.
So they're on their way to high school stuff. Is this something that they're passionate about as well?
They've certainly been involved in it, because both my husband and I are involved in development, and mm-hmm. they're involved with us in that. They help volunteer. And as part of when I was a student in education, I worked on a project with Free the Children so that we could raise money for a school and a well for Haiti. This was after the earthquake in Haiti. And my children were a part of that project, and their school became a part of that project, raising money. And mm-hmm. so I'm sure that this will be part of their – it's part of their roots. It'll be part of who they are.
Well, I want to thank you again. My guest has been Debbie Morales of Horizons of Friendship. Go to www.horizons.ca for more information on all the projects that they have ongoing. Rob Washburn, thank you once again for being my co-pilot. And we are out of here. Remember, folks, we don't write the world, but we do report it. I'm Dave Glover. This is The Drive Time.